Greetings, listeners, and welcome to another episode of The Story Never Ends, the podcast where we reread our favorite books and watch their adaptations. I'm Audrey.
And I'm Tinashe.
And this episode, we once again take a bit of a detour from our Harry Potter discussions. We're currently up to book 6, I believe, and we're just going to focus on other things we love in the book, film, and TV space, so that we can just, let out some of our obsessions and let you guys in on how we usually engage in the fandom space. I think to start us off, a recent, obsession or space that we were in was the Bridgerton, universe, and I guess Tinashe, you can just start us off regarding like what you're looking forward to. I know it's super early in terms of season 3 coming, but we have, I guess, so much to explore regarding what has been coming out, the teasers that we've been getting. Just a little bit about that.
I think for myself, like what I really hope to get in season 3 is a lot more Canthony, that is Kate. Amen. And Anthony than we did in season 2. Season 2 was wonderful. I cannot lie, like I truly enjoyed it more than I did season 1, because I felt like, yes, there was a little bit of self-insertion there, seeing I'm a black woman, but also seeing a dark-skinned Indian woman like getting love, being in like exploring her like a romance where she is the lead, where she's the love interest, like for me, I was like, yes, I love this. So I'm hoping that in season 3, we get more of that. We get more of her being loved on by her wonderful, sexy husband, like, the Viscount. And, like, I know it's going to be more focused on Colin and Penelope, but in the same, way that, the Canthony and the Featheringtons were kind of, featuring more in the last season, with more of the Featheringtons, kind of overwhelming the last episode, the season finale. I hope that, the coming season will just be as good for us Canthony shippers. What about you, Audrey?
Yeah, I'm very much like you. I mean, I'm just thinking, sorry, I just started thinking, when you said the Viscount, I just started thinking about how Anthony and his emotiveness just made us like swoon, like
right
girls. There are times when I find I'm on YouTube and a clip comes on and it's recommended and it's a Canthony clip. I just look it up and I just, I click on it and I just start watching it. And next minute I'm watching certain other reels about like the Canthony space and stuff. And I just really enjoy it. I think for me, more than anything, I am looking forward to, like you said, the domesticness of them. And I think I told you, the Viscount and the Viscountess, in terms of Kate and Anthony, won't be background characters, because Bridgerton House is now Anthony's home. He's now, he's the head of the
that
family.
That part, like, unlike so, Daphne, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So Daphne had to step away because she gets married to someone who doesn't live centrally to the Bridgerton home. Mm. But Kate can move into that space and be part of that home. I think it would actually be more interesting, maybe exploring maybe a little bit of a conflict point between, Kate and his mom. Not conflict, like, major drama, but, just like a little side story of like maybe Kate's mom is, maybe Anthony's mom is getting used to Kate sort of running the household or something like that. That's a way for me I can think of the domesticness that I'm talking about. I'm talking about seeing them just be, and there will be the central point in terms of like whatever Colin is going through. He'll always be coming home to Bridgerton House because he doesn't have he doesn't yet have his own space, I suppose. At the end of the day, it would be one of the featured, it's its own character really at this stage, like the Bridgerton home. So because of that, Kate would be there featuring in the background. It might not be main character, mode, or even like super secondary character, but they'll be there at some point. And I would hope, like you said, if they're teasing this season 3 thing, I would hope there's more of that. But I did want to just sort of, I guess, now digress, and then we can come back to Canthony. But because season 3 is going to be Penelope and Colin, and we did talk about a little bit, but I guess for our listeners to just know more about what we're thinking about it, what are your thoughts regarding the upcoming coupling, considering how they've been set up so far as literally unrequited love trope.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah, yeah. When I say I hope that Colin grovels, like he is crawling on the floor, on his belly. He's got tears running down his face. He's got snot, like snot level. Like, not that I want that, like that's disgusting, but I want him to suffer. Like this angst. That's so delicious and enjoyable. And then there's, what they call it, womp or whatever. I'm not for that, but yeah. Angst, when done well, when written well, can provide so much good material for us to consume. Like I'm eating them up. So I think that's the only way it can work. Like, you know, and I want Penelope, like we said before, to be loved on for, because considering I was watching this, a video of like what other people are hoping to see about Penelope and Colin, and they replayed that part where Colin is outside with his boys, and the boys are like, "Ah, we saw you dancing with Penelope, so are you guys gonna be, you know, an item kind of thing?" And Colin is being his, you know, F boy, you know. Leaning into his F-boy behavior, and he's like, "No, me and Penelope," and he says something really derogatory or demeaning towards, you know, who, yeah, to someone who's supposed to be his friend.
Yep.
Let's forget even romance, to someone who's supposed to be his, yep, friend, really, and he says something like that, and which is something that he's done,
yep,
on other occasions, and Penelope just kind of either forgives him because she's got this crush on him, and you know what? I get it. I understand it. But I think that really put the nail in the coffin for Penelope. Like, there's no way any self-respecting, like, you know, even with, like, you know, even if you've got a major crush on someone, there's no way any self-respecting person can go back to that, even if Colin's, like, tries to ignore it or apologize, which in a way that's not meaningful. So I'm hoping Colin grovels. I hope Penelope is loved on. I hope they really show her being, like, you know, her beautiful self. And I wonder how, like, the other set of things, Penelope and Eloise, how that's going to affect Colin and Penelope's relationship. Like, is that going to act as a wedge in them developing anything, and just Penelope and Eloise relationship as well on top of that. Yep.
I don't mean, I can add more to that, but you've perfectly surmised what I would want to say. I think the only addition would be, like, when I'm thinking of, like, what you're saying, like him groveling and everything, I'm really curious to see what the turn would be, right? Like, what would be the turn? Like, do they do a Canthony where they drag it out so long that by the time you sort of get to the end, it's like, oh man, we wanted more so we can see them developing. Because like what you're saying, the Eloise element is what's going to make it interesting to say, is it that Eloise will forgive her and or Penelope will seek forgiveness early? Or is it that it gets dragged on for the season? We can only speculate. Although, obviously, we have been seeing the behind-the-scenes footage and, you know, Penelope looks really good. Although, I did want to ask, though, what is it about, I'm not going to say the ugly duckling because that term has been sort of outdated.
Yes. But
Penelope obviously was portrayed as a character who's more plus size than the girls that are these main love interests in Bridgerton. But then now we're seeing behind the scenes photos, and it could just be the actress would have lost weight generally, but I am definitely seeing a difference in terms of, like, her weight to compared to when she was Penelope season 1 and 2.
Yeah, I think I've seen, what you're saying, yeah.
I don't know, I guess my question is, are we sort of, is there any detriment to trying to portray, you know, someone as glowing up by, you know, being like everyone else kind of thing? Because, you know, Penelope is a very beautiful woman. I don't think she needed anything to, like, change her body or weight or whatever. I know it could be just be a creative decision. It could be also be the actress just naturally losing weight. But I think it's a decision made to go with that glow up, you know, going from the ugly duckling
to the princess. Okay, I see what you mean.
Like the Cinderella moment, but it's done in a way that's, I think for me, could be problem. And mind you, to any listeners here, this is just conjecture. I'm just like joining bits and pieces. It could be something that doesn't even factor into whatever happens. But I'm like, interesting.
It could have been the actor's choice to do that. But probably it is maybe a glowing up thing. But then now we delve into like society's perception of what's attractive is, and that's a bit of a heavy topic and a very controversial topic, like when you're talking about that. So I hope they do not do it in a way that implies that, you know, if you're plus size, you're not considered beautiful, or because she is very beautiful, the actress, the character, and Penelope is beautiful. So and I'm sure there are other people who, you know, we talk about representation and all the stuff, right? And especially right now, social media is like, you know, is in shambles with all the other representation that's happening that people are not agreeing with. Not saying that, you know, one issue equates to the other. They're all different in their own way and they have their own weight, but I really hope that, you know, whatever they give us is tasteful and, you know, it's not shaming anybody.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, it could work. You can
finish. No, I'm not done.
I was just going to say, it factors into what they were, because remember they were like, oh, she's 2 stones lighter or something in like season one. I remember, because I've rewatched season one very recently. So I'm remembering some of that dialogue. So they reference how Penelope is on the plus size compared, like the sisters, you know, how like Penelope sort of like is that Cinderella story dynamic where she's got the two evil sisters or dark sisters in this case.
Wait, what? I never actually made that connection. Well,
I never just did now because I'm thinking of how to compare them, but that mean and aggressiveness, I can, I have 2 sisters, so it's a three sister dynamic, but I don't have that conversation. Those conversations are not done with my sisters where it's like mean-spirited and someone is trying to bring you down because of your weight or whatever. But that's what they do in the show. So maybe it could factor into her thinking she needs to do that. And it could be a moment for Colin to say, you're beautiful as you are or whatever. You know, like it could be that. You know, it could be something that works to favor the story.
Validation from a man, huh?
I know, but
I'm not that kind of feminist, but validation from a man, huh?
But the thing is, right, you kind of have to think,
I think that's the thing,
you know, we separate, when you're attracted to someone, you do want them to find you attractive back. Yes, so if she's thinking she needs to go out into the world as this different person, it might be that Colin validates that she is beautiful as she is. But she already would be believing that. I'm not saying she needs to hear him say it to believe it. I think she just needs to come to that realization herself. And then when Colin sort of realizes, she'll be like, yeah, I know. Like,
and right there, I think that's the crutch of the matter with Penelope. Like that, the only way she finds that she can be her confident self is when she's laid the whistle down.
Otherwise, she's
a very shy, very introverted.
Wallflower, yeah.
Yes. That's the word. And she's just, you know, dying within herself to, like, you know, reveal this crush she has. But she's afraid. She doesn't want to do that. Society plus other things, yeah.
Mm. So, yeah. I just thought to bring it up because I just thought it was interesting when I saw the photos. I was like, oh, okay. But she looks really, honestly, for me, it's just a gripe from the fact that, like, sometimes I hate when, like, you know, TV tries to use those types of connotations of, like, oh, one becomes beautiful when they, you know, do certain things that society finds as conventionally beautiful, whatever. Mm. But regardless, I'm very excited. Like you, I want it to be that unrequited love. Because already the trope, if we go into tropes for a bit before we move on to the next topic, the idea of the trope being something that when you're first in having a crush on someone that doesn't like you back, there comes a point, like you're saying, when you just give up on that crush and then you start living your life. And then that person realizes, oh my God, I actually have a crush back on this person. But now you've kind of moved on. So it's not the job of this person who had a crush on you to try to you had a crush on but have moved on to try to then convince you to be like, no, you can still, you know, like me and stuff like that. So that's the dynamic I hope they're playing, but I'm open for anything. I trust them.
Do you think they might, though I don't think I like it now that I think about it, but if they go like to all the boys I've loved before kind of direction where she's not trying to get Colin to fall in love with her per se, but more so like, you know, to make him jealous without the intention of to make him feel what she felt. Mm. So the Bridgerton media have posted, like, you know, we're getting three new guys in the show. Don't know if they're all going to be Penelope's love interest or where they'll fit in.
If one or two of them are,
and she maybe become friends, are we also going to get the fair relationship trope from them as well?
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So now that I think, as I said, I don't really like it. I actually want it to be loved on.
Well, I was going to say, I don't like it from the perspective, like you said, that at the end of the day, no self-respecting woman would still want a guy that's talking about not you know, seeing her in any with any value, or, you know, like you said. She definitely needs to be loved on. I think she will be. I think it'll be, like you're saying, I think for me, I see it working in the way that Penelope now starts getting attention from other men, and Colin starts noticing that. And he starts noticing that she has some power, because now, I think at the end of season two, we kind of saw that Penelope accepted that she's kind of Lady Bridget, I mean Lady Whistledown, even though she hasn't revealed who she is. She's now kind of set more in.
I love how you said Lady Bridget, but you're right.
Yes, she's gonna be Lady Bridget. But, you know, like, as in, she's now at that point where she's accepting that identity. She's not trying so much to hide from it, but she's not revealing it yet, because her dynamic with Eloise, if she had been really truly like Eloise's friend in that moment, she wouldn't have then gone and picked up the pen again and started writing. But you know, she owned it up and she kept writing. Ooh, so
she does pick up the pen at the end of the season.
Yeah, she does. She does write more. Yes. And we end on Whistledown's voice. Yeah. Which I could always say, thank you, Julie Andrews, for like literally narrating. It just, Julie Andrews' voice like makes that show like so much more life.
Yes. Anyway, I remember when they started, I think started this season, I think we had, at some point in time we were hearing Penelope's voice and then it just kind of moved.
Yes, it did. I really like
Julie Andrews' voice. It just brings a certain quality to
it. And I hope they keep it, because even when they, I don't, do you think they would ever reveal, not like, you know what, let's wrap this topic up really quickly, but do you think they would ever, in the books they do reveal she's Lady Whistledown, but in the book Lady Whistledown is not that big of a deal anyway. But do you think in this one, in the show and the way it's going, do you think they could reveal that? Because I see so many
implications. I feel like if they reveal it, someone like Colin, eventually when the two get together, needs to know quite early on, and probably she'll probably need to change. I don't know if Colin will be into it, but if it's something that they don't reveal, if they plan to reveal it later on, Colin will need to know so that the reveal does not affect their relationship.
That's true.
Unless they're going for the drama. But you know how with shows with the mysterious antagonistic character, they always reveal them. Pretty Liars, they revealed the character. Mm. Gossip Girl, they revealed who Gossip Girl was. Whether that's good for the show or not, I don't know. But they've already revealed it to the audience. I feel like since they've revealed it to the audience, we really don't need it to be revealed to the...
I think if it's going to be revealed to the characters, it might be sort of a scandal thing, but it might be that whatever happens, like you're saying, Colin and Penelope still get together, obviously. But I think Penelope might end up being, obviously, more of a writer, like actually just a writer in general, rather than a gossip writer. And Lady Whistledown gets taken up maybe by someone else. Like, as in, maybe it becomes more of like a collaborative community thing, rather than she being at the helm. I'm just thinking. Yeah. Like, but because she's such a wallflower, she'll need other wallflowers to sort of do this. But anyway, whatever. I guess, are we sort of done with talking about the Bridgerton?
I only wanted to ask you just one last question. Like, in terms of outside of her romantic relationships, her friendship with Eloise, how do you feel like that's going to pan out, like, in the coming season?
I'm actually really anxious about that one, because both are very stubborn characters in terms of, like, obviously Penelope, she's not as she's a bit more morally gray than Eloise, because Eloise kind of sees things as black and white, I suppose.
And when she's cornered, she's quite vicious.
Exactly. And they're both vicious, right? So I think, obviously, Eloise won't reveal that it's Penelope, but she'll be maybe feeding Colin certain information about Penelope to try to, if he's seemingly interested in Penelope, which might then lead to a longer span of getting together than we might expect. So I see a lot of viciousness still coming, a lot of looks and chilliness, you know, iciness towards each other.
Yes.
What about you?
Same thoughts, really. Like, I really don't know how they're going to go about, you know, fixing that relationship. Can it ever be fixed? Will they ever be forever? Like, you know, even especially when Penelope is not married into the family, are they just gonna be like, you know, those in-laws who just don't talk beyond, like, you know, behind gritted smiles and stuff like that? So, like, you, I have no idea, like, how they're gonna tackle that one. Like,
that is where they left off.
Where they left off, yeah. Like, sorry,
isn't that is assuming the marriage happens early? You know, if the marriage between Colin and Penelope happens later and they're still icy, that means season four is going to be still the same thing, which would be very annoying. But, yeah, and then also, obviously, the Benedict dynamic as well, because obviously he was supposed to technically be in the order of books the next story adapted.
Yeah.
But
yes.
I suppose I'm curious to see how, where they take him, so that when he comes back and his story happens, what's going to happen? Because his story is very much a Cinderella story type trope in terms of the girl. Like being someone, yeah, I won't reveal it for spoiler's sake for people that aren't wanting to know, but...
I don't know either.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, do you want to know? And then I say spoilers to people that don't want to know, they skip.
Is this based off you reading the book?
No, I didn't read the book. I just read about it and heard about it.
Hey, we're just speculating here.
No, this is just the book. Like, this is this book synopsis. It's not like a spoiler in terms of like.
Oh, yeah, no. Share.
Yeah, no, so yeah. In the book, like, the girl is. I don't want to say the word online, but she's online. What do you call it? The B word, like Jon Snow, but like she was born out of wedlock. She was born out of wedlock.
What did you want to say?
I don't know. It's just so weird saying it. It's just weird. It's just a weird word. But anyway, she was born out of wedlock. Let's just say that.
Like,
and
that's better.
In that dynamic, you know, in that time, it was a big deal.
Yeah.
So then she ends up somehow being a maid in the Bridgerton house.
Ooh,
and Colin has met her prior to that, but he doesn't really remember her. But he remembers meeting someone. So there's a whole dynamic there that happens. But what I've heard is that the fans of the book, that is, don't tend to like that one because of some weird sort of problematic things. But it could be a good thing to adapt if it's done well.
Okay.
So that's kind of what I wanted
to say. It does sound interesting. Yeah.
I hope it is. But if anything,
it's just that if you're speaking in like Regency type of stories, that master and seven kind of, you know.
Yeah, I think that's one. Yeah. But mind you, she's not like out of wedlock from like a poor commoner person. She's from like a, you know, a rich family, but she's just obviously not. The dynamic makes her more like lower in the rank of her family members, so she's ill-treated, all that stuff. So yeah, anyway, I suppose Bridgerton, we're just looking forward to it, season three. And but for now, whilst we wait for Bridgerton, we are, you know, being graced by the Game of Thrones franchise once again, and the Lord of the Rings franchise once again. And they're still using the same theme song, by the way.
When I listen to it, the beat that I've watched of it, it sounds the same, but not quite. Is it just me?
I don't know about that, but they use the same soundtrack. Literally, the beats, everything, like the way that, you know, how in the original one, it would go from like House Stark,
CGI. Yes, yeah, that part. Yeah, yeah,
they
kind of
do that, but then they're chronicling the what do you call it?
Valeria?
The family tree of like the Targaryens. Yeah, so the marriages and everything like that. That's what that one kind of like talks about, and it's got the blood flowing through the thing. But I've watched House of the Dragon. I know you haven't.
I've watched a bit of it. Unfortunately, there was noise where I was, so I feel like, especially the first episode, you really need to sit down and watch and listen. How did you find it?
I have not been doing anything when I'm watching House of the Dragon. I've literally been just watching it. Like, it is not one of those shows where, I mean, obviously, I don't even think with Game of Thrones I did that either. With Game of Thrones, I was literally glued to the TV. I'm sort of back to that glued to the TV dynamic, whereas most times I'm like, yeah, I could look elsewhere. I mean, outside of Bridgerton. Bridgerton, I'm always looking at the screen. But anyway, so I'm finding it very, very good. I would say my expectations have been exceeded 10,000 times because I didn't go in with any expectations. As in, obviously the way season 8 ended, for those that don't know, Game of Thrones ended on a very bad note for a lot of fans. Some of us even cried.
And some people were, you know how I was talking about crawling, some people were even crawling on the floor.
But the crying on the floor part, though, if you remember, wasn't about the crying. It was actually happiness, if you remember, because I was thinking Jon Snow would get a chance. But
No, it was.
I cried because I remember I was sitting next to you going, what is going on? Crying. Yes, and then when we were talking about, I think we were then listening to a podcast that was talking about the show, and they were like, season 8 ends with Jon Snow in the north and Sansa in the north. So that dynamic for me, because I like them. That's why I was falling on the floor out of happiness.
We're remembering this differently.
No, I don't know about you remembering it, but that's how I know I did it.
Okay.
Because I don't remember. I remember like literally sitting next to you and I looked at you crying and you just were like, oh my God, Audrey, what the hell?
Honestly, I was so upset. But let's not digress into the upsetting.
Very true.
Yeah.
So as some would know, I'm sure if there's feedback, I apologize. I'm not sure what's going on with the feedback on my end. But at the end of the day, House of the Dragon is becoming its own thing completely. Mm. For those that might be seeking connections to Game of Thrones, might be, but it's nothing like...
Well, I know the bit that I watched, they make it a point to really like, I think in the opening credits, not in the opening credits, but after the opening credits, they really write that this is set, however, many thousands of years before Daenerys Targaryen.
Yeah, so it's 172 years, by the way. Not 1,000 years, because that's too long back. It's all right. I thought it was also thousands of years. Then I remembered that technically Aegon the Conqueror came 300 years before the events of Game of Thrones. So it's only been three dynasties. Because if contextually, this guy, the author of the books, George R. R. Martin, based it on like actual English history, whatever. So
yeah. Anyway.
But House of the Dragon is really good. Without digressing too much.
So Aegon, is Aegon the child of all this I know from social media?
Yeah.
Of Daemon and Daenerys?
No. They name the new kid called Aegon is a kid of the king and someone else. I won't spoil yet because if I tell you, then you'll see it coming and it won't be as like, yeah. But Aegon, the original Aegon, was the ancestor. He's dead, obviously. But the new character called Aegon is just a baby and he's born between the king in the show and someone else, but not Daemon and whatever. There's definitely incest or at least incestuous feelings towards other people. Obviously, the Targaryens are known for that. There's a lot of, what I would say is, rating, because I watched the latest episode this morning like before I started work, because I had to wake up
how many episodes
so far? It's episode 5 and I think it's a 10 episode season, so it's like mid-season. I'll say so far characters have made choices that have led to consequences that will lead to more consequences. That's literally the best I can say in terms of how they're setting it up to be different from Game of Thrones in the sense that they're still playing the Game of Thrones, right? You know, like people still want power, the idea of absolute power corrupting absolutely, the desire for power and what it will make you do, that desperation. But you really don't feel like, I mean, aside from the comparisons that people are trying to make about like the main girl, the one with the blonde hair that you might have seen like in the Red Rhaenyra or whatever, aside from people trying to say, oh, she's a bit of a Daenerys and Arya vibe to her. Personally, I feel like these are just their own characters. I don't say anyone is like a Jon Snow or like a, you know, Sansa or whatever. Like, I don't get those vibes. I don't get the Ned Stark vibes in anyone. Obviously, that's not to say these characters don't have those qualities that these other characters had. But I don't feel myself wanting to go, oh my God, that's like this. Because it's a totally different story. And there's one scene which almost broke my heart for reasons that it shouldn't even have been breaking my heart. But it's just because of the way that it develops. And also you have to be mindful, there's time jumps across the board because they're covering so much history they don't have the luxury to sort of sit in 1 year and like have something unfold over 1 year. So far they've been jumping around. So I won't talk anymore really, because otherwise I won't let you talk. But how, for you,
but I want you to also take, since our next topic would be like, both of us haven't watched a lot of Lord of the Rings.
Yeah,
we really want to discuss the backlash of about regarding the diversity.
Oh yeah,
and so I know there's some diversity in
there is quite a bit.
I was about to say Game of Thrones, House of Dragons,
House of the Dragon. You just started like I saw a tweet where they were like black people saying House of Dragon.
It's actually the House of the Dragons, isn't it?
Yes, it is House of the Dragon,
and it's just House of Dragons to black people on Twitter.
Oh my god, I love black Twitter. But diversity wise, there's a new family called the Valyrians. That's not a spoiler. It's just. You see them on the posters.
Yes.
They are also a Valyrian family. Valyrian, what do you call it? Wherever they came from. They're also a Valyrian-based family. Apologies. They're also a Valyrian-based family. Like, yes. Is it Valyrian? Was that where they came? Valeria? That's where they came
Valeria
from.
Valyria or something like that. Yeah.
Before the Doom. So they also are from there. And they're also dragon riders. So it's not just the Targaryens anymore. But I think the show obviously is not going to be like how... I don't want to spoil it, but essentially, as you all know, by the time the show Game of Thrones starts, there's no more dragons. So we're obviously seeing people that aren't going to be there 172 years later, because obviously they'll be dead by then.
Yep.
But it's just interesting how in this one, it's not that just the Targaryens. It's almost like how people say usually the royal family isn't the most powerful family in any like realm. It's usually the aristocrats and stuff like that, because the Valyrians have a lot of money. They're the richest family. They're also dragon riders. So they've got a lot of power and influence. So that's the dynamic that's being played. And they've cast them as having, obviously, darker skin. They're black people. And they do marry into the Targaryen family. So there's some half whatever children. And they look lighter than their parents maybe. But that dynamic, I suppose, is... If you're someone who's a stickler for wanting something to be as it is, and how George R. R. Martin probably wrote these characters as Caucasian-looking people, then that's for you to worry about. But I think if you're going into this as a story, it's just an interesting dynamic because they've got dreadlocks, you know? Like, it's really nice to just see people that you see every day, because we see people
with dreadlocks. I saw that, like, and... Day. But the funny thing is, there must be... there might be some backlash in terms of the diversity on Game of... on House of Dragons, but I've not really seen it on Twitter as compared to
Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings, yes. Like people are like, yes, this is a very expensive show. It shows, but really, they should have stuck to like you know how the characters are represented in the books or in the other movies and stuff like that. Yeah,
I guess to go on to Lord of the Rings for me, the Rings of Power being the show. It's very interesting because I love The Lord of the Rings purely because I don't think I've got that connection to the books, right? Like, I've never read the books, and
me
I'm sure
neither,
you haven't either. But it's such a special world that I don't necessarily see it as a world where you need to have characters in a certain color, because it's pure fantasy. I mean, if you're going to talk Game of Thrones is fantasy, but it is almost rooted in real history, right? Because he based it on the War of the Five Roses, which was a war in like mid-century England, whatever. And, you know, Westeros is literally England in its conception. Mm. And a source, whatever, will be like Europe. So that one kind of has the dynamic of being rooted in some real life history. If we're going to be sticklers for history like that, even though we don't need to because it's fantasy. But Lord of the Rings for me, the concept of Middle Earth and all that stuff. And people talk about J.R. Tolkien, like, you know, putting in stuff about World War II. I don't know, whatever I've read about him or about that. But it is literally the most fantasy of fantasy. Like,
I feel like, honestly, like, if we're talking about representation, can't we share? Like, when it makes sense, can't we actually, if I say if it makes sense, because some people...
Don't even
want to think of it that way. Like, you know, I've seen posts, which are funny. This was Black Twitter taking, like, ownership and just making fun of the purists. Like, you know, what about if we have, what's his name? Ryan Gosling is, you know, playing Barack Obama. And I had a good cackle, but also jumping like to what's happening with Ariel, the Little Mermaid, like, you know, Chloe Bailey is playing it. She is light skinned. I don't know if she's biracial, but she's light skinned, definitely. And still that's making the purists, like, you know, jump up and down, like, you know, it's fantasy. Mermaids. Hey man,
both times you attempted. It's all good.
There was a word that I couldn't say the other time, and you finally broke down, and you're like, pensive.
Pensive.
But they exist in all cultures. I saw this post saying that, you know, this grim fairy tale. It's a grim fairy tale. Yes, all these grim fairy tales are from they were wrote by German writers, and therefore the people portrayed in this would be like, you know, Caucasians, and I'm like, it is fantasy. Do we not have a lot of material already out in the universe on every platform that has a lot of, like, have we not spent
it's all good.
Have we not watched a lot of TV shows and movies that you don't even see one black person, one Indian person, one Asian, Chinese, Korean, and stuff like that? And you're able to enjoy it. But especially when I watch those shows, right? Even when I finish, I've enjoyed it. I'm like, there was something missing. There was something missing. And I found that with, like, the Vampire Diaries, like, you know, even though I was enjoying these other people, but I felt like, I was like, where's Bonnie? Like, I'm trying to find Bonnie in every scene kind of thing. Yeah. There is something missing. Yeah.
You know, for me, two things. I think the problem is, we're going to say clearly, white people expect stories to still retain their whiteness when they don't understand that by colonizing the world, they opened it up for us, dark-skinned people of color, whatever they want to call it,
to
come over to their so-called countries, for example, because they just destroyed our own countries and all that stuff. We're not going to get into that colonial argument. Not so much destroyed, but in the sense that there is a phenomena where, you know, the colonizer returns back, or the settler returns back to their country, but the colonized end up seeking better, you know, things or resources in the colonizer's country, because they've taken the resources and taken them to the place. So we're going to follow those resources because, hello. But regardless, what I'm trying to get to the point of is, we can't say, for example, properties that are inherently black. So think of any African story that might be told, right? We can't say that needs to have diversity, because that's a world that has not been, what do you call it? I guess the majority of the people that live there, right, are not anything else but black. It's not a world where we've had a mixture of white people coming in and being part of the mythical stuff that we've gone through, or the legend stuff that we've gone through. But the difference is, we now have a dynamic where there's so much multiculturalness going on in, like, the global West, if we want to call it that, where the global North, whatever, where we as black people, people of color, whatever, have now come and migrated and become part of these cultural dynamics, and we're now part of the writers' rooms of these shows and movies that are being made. We're now the authors authoring some of these things that are being written. So you can't expect us to just sit here and be like, oh no, we can't get any slice of the pie just because you think your story, because it was written by a white person and thinking, in, I guess, in a white voice, that it can't then have black people in it, especially when it is fantasy. If it's history, I don't care. If it's, I remember there was that Anne Boleyn show that came out with one of these young actresses that's coming up, and they cast her as a black woman. And I'm like, I don't need that. Like, honestly, for me, I honestly was like, I'm offended on behalf of the white people, because I wouldn't want them to touch our history and think they can cast a white person just because it's a show. I understand that's a historically white person. Keep them historically white. For example, Bridgerton did a good thing. Queen Charlotte has always been rumored to have been half caste in some ways.
Yes.
They cast her as a half caste. What am I saying?
For real?
Yeah, no. Queen Charlotte apparently did descend, like, her line. Her mother would have been half black or something like that. So she would have had that dynamic going for her. But in that case, that was a historically accurate character, and they did represent her. They didn't just say, oh, we're going to have a black queen just because it's Bridgerton. They actually went for historically accurate story, Terry. Yeah. But when it comes to fantasy, honestly, for me, unless the author strictly says, I don't want black people, I don't think anyone else should have any right to say, we don't want Asian people, we don't want black people, we don't. Watch the iteration that doesn't have those black or white people, because you've had those iterations forever and ever. If
many,
you just
want to
watch
many.
White people, just watch The Lord of the Rings, because it hardly has any black people, and the black people in there are the mean characters or the evil characters. That actually was a thing that was done where
they are hidden behind makeup and mounts of makeup, like in The Lord of the Rings, like
the Maori orcs. Cast and all that stuff.
The orcs were,
So, and then for me, the other point, I think when you were talking about it, I've forgotten the second point that I wanted to make, but I think if anything, it touches on the fact that the dynamic between the fantasy reality thing just needs to be less, what do you call it? Like people, I think that's the problem. We're now in a vacuum of like the internet, right? No one is policing anyone enough, or I don't know that there needs to be policing, but no one thinks that what they're doing or saying is going to go anywhere beyond just saying it on Twitter, right? So they just think they can spew this hate, spew this whatever, but they don't realize like it reflects so badly just on us as a society, where we're bickering about like, oh, black people need to be that. Because, for example, in Star Wars, they cast a black woman as one of the, what do you call them? The peacekeeper things, people, whatever. Oh, okay. It's like one of the evil characters. And the hate that she got, that Mark Hamill.
Wait, is that the same? I saw this image of, I don't watch Star Wars, but I saw this image of John Boyega's character and the black woman on a horse. Yeah. Ah, okay, yeah, that's her.
Because they just, I don't know, I don't understand. It is literally one of the most exhausting arguments I see on the internet, because for me, it makes no sense. Like, where is your hate rooted in outside of racism? They try to justify it by saying this and that, but it's just racism. It is just pure and utter racism. That is as basic as it goes.
I do. A part of me does get what they mean. Like, you know, if a character is writing the book or whatever, I want to see that one. But as you say, they've had so many iterations of that. Why not share in the piece of the pie? Like, you know, the other, as you said, we live in a multicultural society. What about those other people who also want to see themselves in that kind of setting? I think this is what happened as well here in Australia. Like, there are TV dramas, soaps or whatever, like Neighbours and Home and Away. I know Home and Away I don't know if they did a good job, but any time that I've kind of seen like a clip here and there, if I'm watching, I've seen like it looks like a very diverse cast.
Okay.
Like,
okay.
Compared to Neighbours, like, you know, I think there was something that came out that Neighbours is a representation of, you know,
that has ended
our
now
neighbors.
Too.
Yeah. Mm. Or in Australia, our neighbours. And it is predominantly like a white. I'm echoing too for some reason.
That's right. I think it'll pass. It just happens once in a while. Sorry, listeners.
It's a predominantly white cast, and it's not representing what Australia really looks like. So what are we doing about that? I don't know if anything came off it, and if they cast any people of color or any other diverse casting that happened. But yeah, I remember that going on for a while.
I remember the point I was going to make. It was, for me also, it is crucial to understand, I do not want representation when representation is not needed in that dynamic of the story.
Yes.
For example,
when it
Hallmark
doesn't make
movies,
sense either.
Exactly.
Yes.
Hallmark movies try to convince me that the white main character who's got white friends, white everything, has the black friend as a best friend. They always try to do that. Hallmark movies. I'm talking about like the dynamic where representation is shoehorned into a story just to say, oh, we've ticked off a box or whatever. I mean, more props to Hallmark for trying to make every black person a best friend. Really, we're so supportive of these white people. But at the end of the day, I think personally, I would not care if Ariel was not, you know, black, or, you know, Lord of the Rings had black people or whatever, as long as it means that when we get to make these properties, right, there is an understanding that we are representing the world that we now live in. Like you're saying, there's now a lot more black actors, a lot more Asian actors, a lot more Indian actors that are of Indian origin, black origin, whatever, but aren't living in India or China or wherever, and are now living in these Western countries, that they also need to work and find substantial work, not just work where they're just like the best friend sitting on the couch waiting for the main character who's white to come back. They also need the main leading roles to be the sexy guy or the sexy gal or whatever. But if all we're going to root the argument in is, oh, that's not what it was like in the book, then I don't know how far we're going to go. Because there's so many elements of fiction that don't necessarily need to be adapted word for word. Or, I mean, we saw it with Persuasion, not even word for word. But I guess what I'm trying to say is they don't need to be faithful like that if it makes sense.
My ex. Yes.
I remember I watched, for example, before we move on to the next topic, I did watch Dune, the movie, right? Did you watch it? Yeah. Did you end up watching it?
Yes, I did.
You remember the black actress that was playing like the scientist who was researching? Yes, ended up dying.
I remember her.
She was not black in the books or whatever, but she worked so well as a character. You don't even, like, that's the thing. I don't go into a movie going, oh my God, black people. But I do go in when it is
not taken like away from my enjoyment whatsoever. Like, I enjoyed it even more.
I was literally like, oh my God, this book wasn't even, and even the Fremen or whatever, I think they were meant to have darker skin just because of like where they live, the desert, whatever. But they've cast those actors as like really having that dynamic of like people that would live in like a sub-Saharan type, you know, country where some might be more melanated than the others because it makes sense. They live in the freaking sun. But we want to just have white people everywhere as if, anyway, but it's fine. I think for me, honestly, I removed myself from those comments. Even when I started seeing that stuff about Lord of the Rings training, I just stayed away from it. I saw the rating. It's got a pretty good rating, solid rating from like a critical perspective. So I know when I go in, I'm going to be excited. I did speak with my friend, for example, that I am a bit skeptical or apprehensive that because it's going to be so heavily CGI and maybe not as many practical effects, I'm not sure because I haven't watched it. It might have that. So if they do, please don't come at me and say, oh, it does have practical effects. But I don't think anyone does. We don't engage with fans like that. But either way.
Go.
But either way, we are on Twitter, so you never know. Yes. But I am worried that like Lord of the Rings had that practical effect, lived in world kind of thing. So like, how are they? Because I really didn't like The Hobbit. I think I've said this before. I did not like The Hobbit. I did not like The Hobbit at all because it just ended up being CGI, money-grabbing, waste of time. So I hope, I'm sure it's not going to be, but I hope it's not going
to
be.
Did you at least enjoy the first one though?
Yeah, like I said, I enjoyed the first one from the dynamic that it was, you know, it's like, oh, okay, we're back in this world. But I do know I didn't feel as like I would for the, it was a tenth of what I probably felt for The Lord of the Rings watching it for the first time. Mm-hmm. It was not, I think I enjoyed obviously like the dwarves, you know, obviously what's his name? Richard Armitage, whatever.
Yes,
like, even as a dwarf, I was like, oh my God. But other than that, what about yourself before like wrapping up the
like you, I will eventually sit down and watch The Rings of Power. Did you see the post on Twitter where people were like, we should kind of call The Lord of the Rings The Lord of the Rings?
I did see that. And all these title variations and stuff my God.
But it'll be, hopefully it'll be something we can discuss in the future. And you definitely discussing in House of
Dragon.
You are now saying House of Dragon.
No, I stopped because you were still talking, but I was going to say House of the Dragon, I think. I don't know now.
But hopefully we'll discuss it at some point in time. That's true. And
We definitely do. And
I love fantasy shows. Granted, like, you know, the person who's calling up talking about fantasy shows and loving them. Yes, this is another genre, science fiction, and a certain person called Audrey did not like The Expanse, but I'm not going to go into that. I will discuss The Expanse with someone who actually loved The Expanse. She was too dumb to get it. We can now move on.
I will get into it. We'll get into it off air, otherwise we'll get into a bit of a fist fight, you know?
Yes, we will.
But I guess moving on, Korean drama world that we, I guess, want to explore for a bit in terms of like, what are we watching in that space? What are we watching, if we are, myself, and what did we sort of love recently or have always loved all time that we just kind of like go back to or think about or revisit?
Like, I just even want to talk about how I even got into this world. I really, my friends were watching Korean drama, and I was like, what is that? Yeah. And they tried to get me into it. And they're like, just watch one or two episodes of this. And I think everyone is introduced to Korean drama this way. Boys Over Flowers. That was my introduction into the world. Okay. And I was hooked since then. And I think Korean drama has really come a long way, especially in terms of intimate scenes. Mm-hmm. If you watch anything from like...
2005, like, 7, you know, 8, 9, all those dramas, they were like, peck on the... mouth.
Yeah, they'll kiss, right? And the girl will be all frozen up and not even pouting. Even the guy wouldn't be pouting. Like,
he did a very toxic representation of like how women should react to sexual advances. Yeah, it's really weird.
Yeah. So it's definitely better now. I think the one I really I've watched so many Korean dramas. And so I think one of my favorites is My Love from Another Star.
Oh, yes, you've mentioned that.
Yes. I don't know. Yeah. Classics like Coffee Prince, The Gong Princess. Most recently, I've gotten into Ha Yun Bin, and I hope I'm saying your name correctly. If at some point in time you click on this obscure podcast, hey, happy. So I've watched Memories from Alhambra and I'm forgetting the other one. The one where he's a North Korean soldier.
Oh yes, Crash Landing on You.
The other woman is from South Korea and she's in a hot air balloon that somehow
Crash Landing on You?
Crash lands into yes, exactly.
I did
crash
say the title, you. But you were just talking too much. You didn't even hear me.
Damn. Nah. Why harsh, Audrey?
Nah, it's all good.
But yeah. And the other one that I've watched recently is called Tomorrow. It's about, trigger warning for anyone dealing with mental health and suicide and stuff like that. It is about that, but the guy on it, man, the Lord took his time. The Lord took his time and created this man.
Oh my God.
But yeah. What about you? What are you watching, or what are you? Oh, actually, before I finish, I'm sorry. I'm very obsessed. There's this show called Little Women. It is,
yes, I remember. You
mentioned in a way, very loosely, and when I say very loosely based on what's the name?
Louisa May Alcott or something.
Yes, I mean, based on her book, name, Little Women. That these children are poor, and you know they're struggling in a way, but their relationship as sisters is what's important and what keeps them together. And then it diverts into like I just watched it. I'm trying because Netflix is doing this thing where you can't binge like the whole season anymore. I know some shows that I'm watching most recently now you can't really binge, so and they do that with some Korean dramas where they release episode by episode, but I don't know what's going to happen in the next coming. They don't do that with Bridgerton. Oh my God, imagine when Bridgerton comes back.
I've heard reports about that, but I'm not sure if it's going to be a model that they continue with.
I wonder too, but if people are not receptive to that, because I'm trying to hold off to finishing this show. So I'm like, currently they're like six episodes out now, and I'm like in the middle of episode 3. So I'm hesitating to like continue and not have anything to watch. Yeah. Cause I've been spoiled by binge watching, but yeah, you.
Oh no, I was going to say, to be honest, I haven't watched a Korean drama properly in a long time because first of all, I need to concentrate subtitles. I can't watch dubbed versions of any TV show ever.
True.
I'm not.
You ever do that thing where you're watching something in a different language and then you're on your phone for a little while and then you're like, no, I actually don't understand this language.
Exactly. Because you can't. You've got to look at the screen and concentrate. Yes. So I haven't watched one, I would say, in a long time. But I would say just going off what you did where you talked about your introduction to the world, funny enough, my introduction to Korean dramas that I can vividly remember, and I could say this is the first time, was in 2007. Into the 2008 holiday, I remember, like Christmas holiday, when we went back to Zimbabwe, and then
really
on ZBC, because is how bad what? ZBC was getting, was a little jewel of and I'm saying jewel because that feeds into the title, I guess, a little gem of a Korean drama called Jewel in the Korean Palace.
I'm sorry, no.
A lot of Zimbabweans. I'm not even joking.
Backtrack. I'm sorry. You got introduced to Korean drama when you were in Zimbabwe. On ZBC, Zimbabwe Broadcasting Network.
On ZBC.
Man, that's
because
wild.
They were, obviously, their programming was turning to terrible bits or whatever. And they somehow had licensing for this drama. So I was just browsing through. Because we did have satellite TV, whatever, DSTV. But I think at that time, we were still connecting it. I can't remember because we'd just gone back. Like, so we'd come to Australia in 2005. This was our first holiday back home. So... Mm. I just remember browsing and we just, like, it would literally come on after the news. It was not like a prime time show that was happening. I'm not even joking. If you ask a lot of people that were around Zim around 2007, 2008, they would say Jewel in the Korean Palace is something I remember because it was on like that much. And I didn't watch all of it.
I've never even heard of it myself. Yeah.
I didn't watch all of it, but I watched bits to get me interested. But mind you, I wasn't then like obsessed. I was just like, oh, what is this interesting show? Because I remember watching it with my grandmother. She doesn't understand English anyway. So we were just sort of watching it more from the action perspective for her. But I was understanding what's going on, the subtitles. Then I come back to Australia. Don't think much about Korean dramas. Don't even care. And then my friends started watching this show. Friends being like schoolmates and stuff. Called Koi Zora, which was Sky is Love. And this was like a thing in our high school sphere, and it was just a drama about, it was high school based, and these two opposites attract type dynamic. These two people come together. One is like a bad boy, or he hangs out with bad boys anyway, bad crowd, and she's like a sweet, you know, nerdy girl, whatever.
Classic.
Fall in love, classic. They fall in love, and it is a bit of like a not abusive dynamic, but obviously high school dynamics are always problematic.
Very like, especially Korean dramas back in those days. Yep. If it's based in high school, you know that it's full of bullying and it's quite toxic.
Full of bullying, but I remember we wanted, there's no streaming back then. So for anyone who's watching this or listening to this who's born after 2000, they'll probably be like, there was no streaming. People had USBs. We'd share it on our computers or Bluetooth it to each other.
We didn't do any such illegal stuff.
We definitely did such illegal stuff. But it was just, in the drama, they fall in love, but then the guy gets cancer. So he breaks his most...
I'm
just
laughing at the cancer, but that's just so classic.
I know.
Continue.
And I was going to say, and as they usually do, instead of telling the girl that he's got cancer, he breaks up with her. And it's a whole heartbreak. And, he fakes that he died. Or he breaks up with her and he disappears, whatever. But she's pregnant. Ooh. Oh, wait. Is she pregnant? No. She's not yet pregnant. I don't remember, to be honest with you. But either way, she ends up falling in love with another guy. And now it's set in uni. And this other guy, poor guy, he's kind of like James Marsden. If you know the actor James Marsden, he's always cast in movies where, like in Enchanted, he's the prince, but he loses the princess to someone else. In X-Men movies, Phoenix or Dark Phoenix, whatever, loves Logan instead of him or whatever. It's like a weird dynamic. He's always the guy who loses the girl. Even in The Notebook, he loses the girl as well. Anyway.
Wait, he was in The Notebook?
He was in The Notebook, I know. That's when I started noticing the trend because I'd watched a couple of James Marsden movies and I was like, this guy always loses the girl.
It's funny that he is typecast that way, but because he's a handsome guy.
I love James Marsden. Like, oh my God. Anyway, let's not go on a tangent about James Marsden, but I do love James Marsden, especially in Hairspray. He had such a good role in Hairspray. Anyway, so he ends up, this guy who gets the girl ends up giving her up, I suppose, because the girl finds out that he's still alive and he's got cancer or whatever. So she obviously goes back to him and this guy gives her up or whatever. And then unfortunately the guy does die, but she ends up being pregnant and she has his daughter. So it is the whole thing.
Wait,
so,
he does die?
Yeah,
this was a melodrama, wasn't it?
It was very much a melodrama. And that was, I guess, without going too much off on a tangent like I did, it was literally a melodrama, but it was very good, especially from my high school level. And I can't say I got super obsessed with Korean dramas then, but as you said, Boys Over Flowers.
Ooh, okay.
That was the sting that kind of got me hooked.
And
it was the early days of Netflix, not early days, but early days of like us all binging things on Netflix, right? So, and I think actually Was it even on Netflix or was it on Viki? But it was on some platform. I think it would have been Viki.
Definitely.
It would have been Viki.
And it's not. It's on Netflix as well, yeah.
But at the time, I think it was on Viki. Oh, my God. Because at the time, my friend, my dear friend, I won't mention her name, you know, in case she's like, why are you mentioning my name on a podcast? But she was also obsessed with Korean dramas. So by her, like, sort of talking about them a lot, I was, like, super into it. Then, obviously, like, you watch and you watch and you watch. I would say one that really sticks in my mind or a couple, there's one where there's like a marriage contract. I think it's actually called The Marriage Contract, where like the guy is sort of a bit aloof or whatever, and then he has to like get married to this woman for some bizarre reason, and she's got like a daughter, but they have like such a good dynamic, like the daughter and him,
they end up falling in love. I think I've seen it on Netflix, like not watched it, but like, you know, when Netflix shows your thumbnail.
Yeah,
and
then yes, kind of, you would have probably
seen
it. Is
that where he's teaching the girl to ride a bike or something?
That's the one. That's the one. And there's a and the reason, and the, another one that I liked as well, this one was a bit more sad, but this one they do, like that whole, inconvenient, what do you call it? Accidental marriage thing where like you get drunk and then you accidentally get married to someone or something happens along those lines. But this one, I don't think they get married. I think they initially they fall into bed together, because they're drunk and or they get drugged and then they do the deed and then she gets pregnant. But he's like forced to marry her or some dynamic like that, but she does end up losing the baby, unfortunately. And they were starting to fall in love, but then they break up, and then she goes off and she becomes this super fabulous person, and then she comes back and this guy is like trying to get her back or whatever, and they do end up falling in love again. But it was a whole melodrama, but I followed it. But the reason why I think I was more into those outside of the Gujun Pyo or whatever is because I think those guys were like unconventional Korean guys. I think that's the thing that kind of got me into it, because I was now used to these guys that are perfect looking. I was like, I cannot do this perfection anymore. I just need people that look like normal people. And these other shows gave me that. Like, I was like, thank God there's some men that are not like perfect. Gosh.
Yes.
But also I would say the top one that I would say really, really, I remember outside of Boys Over Flowers. Do you remember The Heirs? Or The Inheritors?
Do not do that to me. Do you know how much I've never rooted for the second guy so much in my entire life? Kim Woo Bin. That man is a specimen.
I remember that I did not like him when you and Hope were like loving him. But yeah, I think he was my initial push to be like, get into the non-conventional looking guy. Because I was still into Lee Min Ho because obviously Boys Over Flowers.
I think that's what also drew me into the drama initially.
Yeah.
But as it went on, I'm like, who is this guy?
Exactly. So but honestly, I think for a lot of people, going into Korean dramas is like, oh, foreign language, whatever. But the love for it is just comes from the fact that it's a different world. It's a different world. And that's why you watch a French movie, a Spanish movie or whatever. Like, you know, like what's that one that we love? Is it not Elite? What is it called?
Yes, it is Elite. Elite.
Like, you know, it's these high schoolers that are doing crazy stuff. But honestly, it's because it's set in a different world. If it was in a Western culture dynamic, it wouldn't be the same. You know, it would be just everything controlled by parents or whatever. So in a Korean drama dynamic, you've got the element or the dynamic of like the elders, respect for your elders kind of thing. And then class is such a big deal that a lot of the Cinderella type story dynamics come into play.
Yes,
exactly. But I did mention to you the recent one that I tried to watch, which I couldn't stomach because the dynamic was like they meet when she's like 12 years old. The gentleman and lady, but it just didn't have a good dynamic. So I was like, no. And they're becoming longer and longer, I'm finding. So I'm not watching some Korean dramas.
I think that's an exception. I don't know. Maybe it's based off, I don't know, but because most of them, especially the one I'm waiting for right now, for until it actually finishes, not filming, but like them putting up the episodes, it's 12 episodes long. So the ones I'm watching recently, I'm on like 12, 16, the usual.
I think I'm wanting ones that are a bit shorter because I don't have a tolerance for long shows anymore.
And you said it's like 50 episodes, but each episode is like an hour and something.
Yeah, I was like, Why would you? That's just, anyway, it must be popular in Korea, so obviously they're doing something. Yeah. But I am excited to start watching Extraordinary Attorney Woo.
Attorney Woo, because
that one, obviously, I don't think it'll be purely romantic. I think it'll be more like The Good Doctor, where it's got the romance, but it focuses more on the character.
I've never watched The Good Doctor, but what you're talking about, like, initially when I got into Korean drama, I was really into the romance, like hardcore romantic TV show drama watcher. But now that, for me, I'm venturing into other genre of storytelling, it's just that if romance is there, bonus, honestly, but mainly it's not like the main focus.
That's true.
Just to enhance a little bit into the story, of the story, but not like the main focus.
That's
like,
true. And I think I would have also credit, because I mean, I've always watched different types of countries, movies and stuff. I've never found the whole foreign language thing that Hollywood tries to play on us is a big deal. But Parasite, I think, was a big deal in terms of getting people to be like, oh, okay, Korean.
Yes.
Media or Korean movies and TV shows aren't just, and obviously Squid Game, like those two, I think.
I'm ashamed to say that I still haven't watched both.
I thought you were going to say, I'm ashamed to say you didn't mention Squid Game first. I'm like, no, Parasite came before Squid Game. But
I did not watch both.
Shame on you, shame on you. But I was going to say, though, no, to be honest with you, I don't know about when you watch it, but I would say they're very good properties, both of them. One being a TV show, one being a movie. Parasite just touched on so many elements of, if you think of how we watch Korean dramas from the romantic perspective, but with this whole class thing going on and they're all mean to each other because they've got more money, Parasite pretty much touches very much on that class dynamic that everybody's obsessed with but a lot of people are obsessed with in Korea. And then on the opposite spectrum, we've got Squid Game, where poor people are literally just, you know, nothing, non-entities, you know. So they're very good properties to show you a different side of Korea and, like, really, like, get you to be like, oh damn, I love my Korean dramas, but this is not a perfect world. But anyway, I think for me, honestly, Korean dramas, love. I don't have anything more to add to this.
I think a perfect segue into that is that I think the reason why I love Korean dramas is they feel like, when you're watching them, it feels like you're reading fan fiction come to life.
Yes, and that's a good segue. It's a
perfect segue into our conversation very good. About I'm a fanfic.
That is a very good segue, girl. Like, I'm actually super impressed. It kind of sounds like how the Nerd Supers is happy about, like, how they segue into topics. Because I've been struggling to try to segue into this topic. So this was the good segue. Very much
so. Yes. So I want to expose Audrey right from the get-go. Can she talk about her love for Dramione, a.k.a. Draco and Hermione?
Oh, my God.
Who cares? Actually, you know what? I want to read. She sent me this message on WhatsApp.
Yep.
And it was about, you know, rest in peace to the queen.
Yeah.
But it was about, so.
Yep.
It's a tweet that she sent to me. It says, the comment is, a comment on Leaky's Facebook page pointed out that as Minister for Magic, Hermione Granger may be expected to attend the Queen's funeral on Monday, her 43rd birthday. Do you think the Queen was informed about the magical world like the Prime Minister? But what she says to me under that is interesting, and she will be attending with her husband, Draco Malfoy. Who cares about Ron Weasley up in this house? She doesn't. So please share with the audience. Tell us about your life. How did it start?
How
did you go even from, like, you know, crack shipping this couple when, you know, I suppose Ron and Hermione are, like, you know,
the canon.
Yes.
You know what? People have to go back. What episode was it when I almost kept you back at my house forever, just trying to show you talk about all the fanfics of Germani that I'd been reading? Literally, go back, people, and seek that episode, and you'll find out, like, how many more fics I've read about this.
Oh, but
to finish with you, exactly. I think I said this in that episode. It's like what when that line about falling in love, like, it just happens slowly and then all at once or something. Wow. Like that, literally.
Wow.
You okay? I hope a certain, you know, who's not listening and going, I don't think you ever said that about me, but anyway. No, seriously though, on a serious note, like, I remember, not when, but I remember reading a fanfic about Hermione purely from an interest, like, curiosity perspective, because I think I'd been on Tumblr around that time. I wasn't, like, a Tumblr user,
Wait, so had you also ventured into reading any Hermione other pairing ships prior to reading Hermione and Draco?
That's the thing. I think it was just a slow discovery of like, oh, okay, there are people that really like Draco and Hermione. And I think at the time I actually read very, I couldn't say full on Hermione fix in the sense that like I was still very much like, what is this, you know, thing that the people are talking about? But I understood where it came from because obviously boy hates girl means he loves her, stupid mythical trope that people like to you know, to push on little girls when they're young and stuff. That was kind of like what a lot of younger drama, like the initial dream, I would say the initial crop of Hermione shippers were in that dynamic of like, we love this dynamic because clearly Draco loves her because, you know, he calls her mudblood. No, that's not really what... That shouldn't be the hint.
What toxic mindset is that?
I'm just saying, like, as in, but you know, when you're younger, you can excuse those behaviors because you're just wanting to see love everywhere you go.
Yes.
But what I, and at that time, the couple of fics I ventured into, one was like a high school based one where I think they were tutoring or helping each other in an assignment, and there might have been something going on. And I think I read one where she actually was in a relationship, I think, with Harry. But then she ended up falling for Draco somehow. And
my Harry into this mess.
We'll get into but I didn't even read it because I was like, oh, Harry and Hermione or whatever. I just kind of came across. Because like I told you, for me, honestly, fan fiction, the beginnings of it were Harry and Ginny. They were the foundation of my fan fiction. Like, I remember I used to, revealing this even on like a platform like this, even though this podcast is super obscure, it's like, oh my God, Audrey, your obsession. My friend and I, back in the day, this would have been like early high school, like, so you're looking like, what, year 7, year 8? We would be talking about Harry Potter every chance we get, right? And I was like, there's a thing called fan fiction. I remember she mentioned it to me. So I was like, I'm going to go seek this out. And obviously you discover fanfiction.com. But from fanfiction.com, for Harry and Ginny specifically, and this is for a lot of fandoms as well, but for Harry and Ginny specifically, they had their own pages. So one of them that I remember was Sink Into Your Eyes or something. Mm-hmm. And that was like a whole thing where they would have challenges, you know, competitions, all this stuff that's Harry and Ginny centric. Dude, I didn't even like... join the competitions, but I was like just obsessed with reading about these people. But I would print out, like, back then we didn't have iPads, okay, we didn't have digital phones and all that stuff, so instead of staying on the computer all day and having my parents go, what are you doing, I would print out this fan fiction and read it in bed, like, you know, page flipping kind of thing. And I was so young, but I didn't even understand like why I was so obsessed with these people. So for me, fan fiction after a while stopped, like, you know, get into like year 10, year 11, you're busy, you don't have time. So I remember I didn't read fan fiction for a long time, I think. And if I did read it, it was maybe one or two friend, like, I think, yeah, one or two properties here and there that I'll probably venture into. But then going into the Hermione love, which is not my own, mind you, I would say Hermione and Johnza for me, being Jon Snow and Sansa Stark, kind of like a par on par. Yes, I'm definitely revealing that. But I'll let you talk and then I can go into my Johnza later. But for Hermione purely, because you put me on the spot, it was just a slow thing where, like I said, the initial stages were just here and there, dabble. But then it was soon after, I think, we started doing this reread that I really was like, I'm really wanting to read fan fiction for Harry Potter, but I can't get back into the Harry Ginny dynamic because it had been such a while for me. I felt like it was more of like a teenage love for me, and I do enjoy their dynamic, but it's quite a safe ship, right? There's not enough tension from the book anyway to lift it up to be like a fan fiction that you always want to go back to. But there's enough tension in Hermione because, what I said before, the younger kids that were writing the Hermione fics were focused more on the toxicity of them in high school in Hogwarts. Mm-hmm. But now the older people that are taking this story are saying Draco was who he was in Hogwarts time, but over the years, whether it's literally since the battle itself, the Battle of Hogwarts, to whenever they meet again or whatever, there's just now a maturity that they give both characters. So like I said, the best one so far for me in terms of purely one that takes them after Hogwarts and they're mature people, they're like in their 30s, is this Measure of a Man fanfic. That one I would recommend to anyone.
How many times I've heard the title of this?
I am so sorry. I have to say it again. Like, the writer of this really understood what it means to take
Please plug the writer as well and where you can find the story.
I know. Oh my God, I'm so sorry. I think when you then start talking, I'll find the writer and like say it in my next thing. But she was just... she understood the assignment in terms of what I would say I want out of a Dramani fic, where you've got the tension. I mean, in some ways, you actually are like, oh my God, you know, I wish she'd sort of alluded to this, to that in the Hogwarts times. But you're like, she doesn't need to, because these people back then, I mean, by the time Deathly Hallows ends, Draco Malfoy is his own person. You know, like, him and Hermione hardly interact, right, in book 7, outside of that scene in the house or whatever. Is it?
Yes,
they get taken. So there's not much you can go back on unless you just want to pull threads that were not there anyway. But she really took these people, gave them 12 years of not being in the same space. They've grown, they've matured separately. Draco is now a dad. Hermione's on her own journey. But she actually ends it. What I actually love is the way she ends it being on the same, in the same timeline as the actual story, like the canon, in terms of 19 years later. So it does end with her at that point where she probably might become Minister for Magic, or she might do something else, but it ends on the platform. It literally ends with them being on the platform 9 3/4, sending off their kids. But the difference is obviously their kids that are in a different like dynamic or whatever, because Hermione is not with Ron, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, I don't want to go on and on about Hermione since you put me on the spot, but yeah, my Hermione love just purely comes from the fact that now I read it more from a maturity perspective. It's such a mature ship now, more so than ever, like in terms of like, it's not just, oh, you know, high school. I mean, even when I read the high school ones, I'm not seeking to be like, what are they doing in high school? It's more so like, how does this writer take what could be a toxic dynamic and really make it mature? And usually I don't read anything prior to like book 6 or whatever. And if I am, it's like, yeah.
I think the only way I can read Dramio, and it feels like a ship that I would read and root for as well. And I know eventually I will get into it, but I think it's funny, right? It's funny that I can read. Okay, I'm about to expose myself. I can read dreary fan fiction, right? But I think the rivalry between Draco and Harry, I can stomach it into it turning into a potential, like, you know, love story compared to Hermione and Draco, because that mudblood, that was toxicity. Like, you know, it's, I'm not saying it's the equivalent of, it actually is the Wizarding World equivalent of maybe kinda, not quite, the N-word. Yeah,
that is true. That is true.
Yeah. So I think I have to think of Draco in a Dramion relationship as, you know, the redeemed Draco. Yeah. And I'm not saying like he's now a good two shoes. I wouldn't even like that Draco.
Definitely
like,
not.
But a Draco who's still got a little dark in him is a great character. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love great characters like in stories, like, you know.
I think would definitely love the way these authors these days are taking Dramini then. I think you would. Like you're saying, purely, and before I forget, The Measure of a Man fic was written by Inna Daze 22. I'm guessing it's Inna Daze, but it's Innadaze 22 is the author of the story. And she's
And where did you read the story?
Or AO3, Archive of Our Own, for those that don't know. But AO3, God, I didn't even say that properly the first time at the same time. I'm like, but yeah, anyway, or did I? I didn't hear it properly from my mic. And anyway, that's all I can really say about that fic. It is perfection for you. Mind you, it's got 1.3 million hits, if you want to know how popular this is.
And kudos?
Kudos about 15,000.
That is a lot. Comments?
Exactly. Comments about 6,000. It's been bookmarked about 6,000.
Comment on archive.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't have that interactive.
Even now, fanfic.net as well, because I ventured into, I don't know how I ventured into Wattpad, because Wattpad is also another like
world of its own.
But what Wattpad does, right, which I like in terms of how you can leave comments, after every paragraph if you want. So if you've read something that you've enjoyed or you want to cackle over, you can literally leave a comment. So a story could have thousands of reviews under one chapter. if it's enjoyable enough, like, wow. You know, I like that kind of leaving reviews, because sometimes maybe you might get to the end of the story and maybe you don't have any thoughts on the whole chapter, or maybe you've had several thoughts, but at least you've kind of left comments in each place that you kind of wanted to comment on, so that, you know, you don't have to then summarize it at the end. So what I do now when I read on Archive or fanfic.net, I write down, like, on the side, like, what my review is as I go down, so that by the end I can just post all of it. But also, like, another topic that we're going to talk about was shipping and crack shipping. So I'll include fanfic.net and maybe what we see on TV and movie platforms, like, you know. So right now, the fanfic I'm reading, I'm back on my The Vampire Diaries train. Yep. And right now I'm reading a story called, let me see. Funnily enough, it's not Baemon, which is my love. It's called, it's To All the Boys I've Loved Before, done TVD style.
Oh, okay.
So in this story, Bonnie is Lara Jean. Tyler is what was Noah Centineo's character? Peter Kavinsky.
Okay.
And Stefan is,
but I would have thought Damon would be.
No. So it's based off, like, that they're in high school and Damon is kinda older, which he was in the story. He should have been messing around with high school kids at all.
Definitely not. None of them should have been messing around with high school kids.
Yes. But in this story, Damon is really the older brother and he's focused on other things. And I'm already on chapter 3 and he's mostly mentioned. I've not really seen Damon.
So is it a Baemon story or no?
No, it's not a Baemon story. Oh, okay. It's not a Baemon story. It's Bonnie/Tyler/Stefan. Stefan is with Elena. Elena is Lara Jean's sister in this story. So She, because of all the death in the family and whatnot, she's decided that, you know, she's tired of, you know, being a Mystic Falls. So she moves to England. And prior to moving to England, she breaks up with Stefan.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Caroline is the best friend. Caroline is like a frenemy with Elena, and the only connecting point is Bonnie.
Oh, okay.
So they're all there for Bonnie, but Bonnie is also like a wallflower kind of thing who hides kind of behind Elena. So once Elena leaves, Caroline is like, you know, I'm going to make sure that you're going to live your best life. You don't have Elena to hide behind. I keep wanting to say this season. You don't have Elena to hide behind. I want you to live your best life. So before they go to the airport to see Elena off, Bonnie is reading her letters that she's written to, like, you know, so she's wrote a letter to Tyler, to Stefan, to three other guys.
Matt? I'm wondering, is Matt one of the guys?
No, Matt is not there. One of them is Enzo. One of them is that Mark Trick guy. Who was on season 1, barely remember him. And the other one is a guy, another warlock that we saw later on in the season when Klaus comes along, but forgetting him. But anyway, so the way the letters get out, Caroline walks in on Bonnie having just finished reading the letter and putting them back. Mm-hmm. But she doesn't want to make it obvious because Caroline will be curious and ask about it. But I think there's a time when Bonnie goes outside and Caroline stays in and reads those letters. And she's the one who...
It's
not revealed yet, but it's obvious that it's her. Yeah.
Okay. So
honestly, in terms of TV, if I'm talking about crack shipping, TVD, like, I've paired Bonnie with Damon, Bonnie with Stefan, with Tyler, with Klaus. The only one I would never pair Bonnie with, I would rather even pair her with that, you know, that Damon wannabe Enzo, but I would never pair her with Kai. I hate Kai to the bone. I hate him. Like, oh, ain't no way. Like,
I would say, honestly, after season 5, I don't remember anything. I literally was like, tuned out.
Honestly, you saved yourself because that show truly, like, you know, yeah, went down the drain.
But I was going to say, it's weird because you seem to be very comfortable shipping people that, on in terms of the source material, might not have anything chemistry-wise that would... Because for me, honestly, to think that Tyler and Bonnie would even have... Because I don't just... I go into fan fiction going, what source or basis do I have for this relationship, right? So, for example, if I start talking about Johnza, for me, John and Sansa Stark, yes, in the show, they don't...
Yes! What basis do you have for... Thank you. Thank you.
I know. What basis, sounds so hypocritical.
What basis do you have for... At least I can say with Bonnie and Damon, you can see, like, you know, where that could come from.
But it's even because you
Bonnie
don't understand.
And Tyler, like, you know, they were friends when they were little.
But that's the thing, though. In the show, there's no connection that they make.
Sorry, I'll shut up. I want you to tell me.
In the show, I don't understand. Do we not watch the same show? So Sansa gets to Sansa's dynamic since. So why am I keep saying dynamic? Sansa's journey up to the point where she reunites with John has been very difficult. Okay. So I think I'm basing it off the fact that
I see what you mean.
I love how you're realizing as you slowly, like the slow realization. But Sansa's had a very terrible journey up to the point where she meets John, right? She's been abused, she's been raped, she's been sold and everything. In the book, she's very much a person that, at least from what I get, because I haven't read the books past book 2, so I'm very much still in the early stages of these people's journey in Game of Thrones. But she's very much a person who's been idealistic for most of her life, you know, the prince and being the princess and all that stuff. She's into all those knights and ladies stories. Then reality hits. But the one thing about John that would actually make John and Sansa make sense is that John is always an honorable person. So he might not do something that everyone agrees with, but there's honor behind it, right? He's someone who thinks your word is, you know, you're tied by your word. You know, he doesn't believe in like abusing children, or you know what, Gilly's character, where she comes from, where their dad is like raping them and stuff. And John has a lot of questions about that. I remember when they first get to that place. So anyway,
I remember the Black Watch, the Night's whatever,
the Night's Watch.
They didn't want to get involved with that.
Exactly. Yes. But he was like, we're just letting these women be raped. And then he ends up like literally saving them and freeing them. So John is very much, if you're going to take two characters who one has this ideal that is now getting pulled away from her every day that she's living, and one who is something that is denied his actual rightful, what do you call it? The heir, the Iron Throne, whatever. He's, you know, he's rumored to, in the books he's not revealed, but in the show obviously it's revealed. He's the son of the former king. So he technically was going to be the king if he had not been if Ned had not taken him in. He's actually the guy that Sansa wants in terms of like the ideals. He's the honorable guy, he's the prince, he's the knight, he's all these wonderful things that Sansa dreams of when she's a little girl. So even though the show doesn't push for that, never does it push for that. What I loved was at first I remember I was so much into the Jon and Daenerys dynamic because I think I was just starved of like romance or love on that show that I was thinking. I was thinking that Jon was going to be with Daenerys all the way through. Yep. But then they got Sansa.
Yeah, you are probably into Jon and Daenerys.
I was into Jon and Daenerys up to the point where I then realized, you know what? Because they rushed the show so much, we didn't actually get to see the benefit of that dynamic unfold anyway, whatever. But I still don't mind them for what the show did with them. But to just then wrap up, for me, Jon and Sansa then came from the fact that when they did reunite, they actually had more chemistry than I could say Jon and Daenerys did. And that's not purely from a sexual charge type of thing. It was more the way they just interacted with each other. And obviously, I know there's the whole dynamic where they're brother and sister, but technically they're cousins, okay? So I'm going to take it in this world. In this world where incest is accepted and brothers and sisters marry and cousins marry, they're better off as cousins than they are as brother and sister. So I'll take what I can get, okay? But I think I just enjoy the fact that they're these people, there's a tension. They're like, I'm still her brother. I'm still his sister. So like, we can't do anything. But these people feel something for each other, but they're cousins. So you're like, okay, it's fine. I know I'm reading something that technically I shouldn't even be into, but it is fine because it's going to not be that. So
Is there a book, is there a fanfic where they're not related, but maybe John is like a ward of the Starks, but there's no relation?
There are some stories that have that, but I think I enjoy more where he's actually the prince. So you actually, Rhaegar survives and all that stuff. And he's maybe like the black sheep of the family because Rhaegar still is with his mom, like still gets together with Lyanna, but like she dies. So then technically John isn't like in the direct line of succession or something or whatever because he was born after the other three kids. So he's sort of like, you know, struggling and Sansa kind of comes along and gives him that hope or whatever. But I don't know, like I think part like what you're saying, I think you are much better at entering a dynamic or crack shipping people that might not obviously be on the face of it, you know, an obvious couple, but the writing is what gets you into it, right? Like if the writing is great, you will get into it. And I think wrapping this up, the point where someone was like, fan fiction has actually become more of what they read than actual books in quotation marks. It's true because in fan fiction, you know what you're getting. It says their romance. It says their, you know, this and that. All those tags, they really help you to be like, this is the story that I'm going to want to read, even if it doesn't unfold how you expect. But you at least know.
But you can pick the text. You can pick what you want in a story and it will have that.
I don't know why romance writers are so safe these days. They're so safe with the way they do their stories. They're hardly as they're like, enough sexual tension in child. Like there was a time when romance books had that, and I even talked to my sister like about that, where we were like, there was a phase when these romance books were coming out and they were so good, but nowadays they're like just like nothing. So anyway, that's enough of that. Really, I don't know what you said you were reading in terms of your fanfic. Did you say you read something recently?
Oh yeah, that's the one I was talking about. I actually realized that
you didn't say the name because you're sort of talking about what it is about.
Let me just plug the author as well. So it's called To All the Boys I've Loved Before by Jazzy Wazzy OH. So Jazzy, JAZZY, WAZZY 08. Okay. Yeah, on fanfic.net.
Okay. The most recent one that I read, actually, one was a Jonza, one was a Dremini. They Tumble Down is the Jonza one. And
I thought you're reading the synopsis. They Tumble Down.
I know. It's called They Tumble Down. It's a very interesting dynamic where they have to get married. And then it's like they don't read. Like, you know, when two people in love are idiots, it's that type of dynamic where they don't know that they're in love with each other. Because of this whole dynamic of being brother and sister, they think, but they're actually cousins, but everybody can see that they're in love with each other. It's just crazy. Anyway, and then it's by Thimblefool, which is Thimblefool. And then the other one, which was a Dramani that I finished recently, is called Choice and Chance. And it's really interesting because they travel back. They go to a different alternate universe. So they come from a universe where there's no Voldemort or any darkness like that. And they go to the universe where Voldemort exists, which is our Harry Potter universe. And it's very interesting because there are two Hermione and Dracos existing, and one pairing loves each other and they're full on doing everything, and the other pairing is still like at odds with each other, but they see how these two are like getting along and like falling in love.
That's hilarious. Like, that's hilarious.
That's not us. But it's just, it's really, by the end, it's really, really good. And it's called it's by Chaos and Crumpets as the author. But yeah, I think moving on then, I think quickly, I know we want to wrap up, but I just wanted to ask, your Walking Dead dynamic at the moment, you wanted to speak on that because...
It was more so that, you know, it's an end of an era. Granted, I have not watched The Walking Dead since Carl died.
Oh, yes.
And I don't even know what season, I feel like that's like season 8, and I think they're on season 12 or something right now. But the show is coming to an end, and we're going to talk about this at some point in time when it initially came out at Comic-Con in July or June. And so we're getting Rishon TV show. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. At some point in time, I'll definitely like catch up on the Rishon. I'll not catch up on the show, but on the Rishon
dynamic
of the show, so that I can understand what's happening in the in the new TV show. I'm not gonna lie.
A fanfic that I reread a lot is this Rishon fanfic called Her, and it's by Kate by the Pound. Anyone in the Walking Dead Walking Dead fandom should know about this fanfic, especially if they love Rishon. So yes. I would say once that news came out, I went back and I reread her. So I reread Rishon as recently as this last month because yes. I just do you remember when that fanfic? Oh, not fanfic. When that couple came together? We won't go on. Nah, that was a moment. That was a moment.
I'm speechless.
People were united. It didn't matter if you're white, you're black, you're Asian. People were just going nuts.
The wild, man. I even watched the Talking Dead episode after that. And I don't care for the Talking Dead, but I even watched that. I think that's what it's called. Yeah,
it is. Yeah, the talk show.
And it was a long time coming that couple. We could see it. Everyone could see it.
The showrunners just kept. But then I think it's a matter of like them wanting to keep you interested. Obviously, they have to keep you interested. Yes. So, yeah, I think in terms of ships, Rishon, you're the goats up there somehow with everything else. It's crazy how you guys, how that coupling's good. But I think did you have any other topic before we wrap up that you wanted to touch on?
I think we do have some other topics that I would like to talk to you guys about, but I feel like maybe we'll leave it to part two.
Very much so.
This has been fun, honestly. I enjoyed doing this. Like, we take a break from our regular podcasting and we just ramble.
Exactly. Yeah. But I've definitely enjoyed. I think if anything, watch out for part six of our Harry Potter discussions. By part six, I mean book six discussion. We'll be starting that hopefully very soon.
This is not a laughter off. We haven't done anything. Exactly. This is a laughter off. You better look forward to that.
No, it is very, very good. And if anything, I would say recommendations, everything that I've said in this episode, go and find it and listen to it or read it or whatever. Yeah. But I'm looking forward to our Harry Potter discussions, and I don't know if you have any final thoughts, Tinashe.
I don't know. Guys, please, be patient with us. We are a baby podcast, still trying to get our feet on the ground, but I hope you guys enjoy listening to us, just talk.
Yep, definitely concur with those ideas. But yes, I think that's it from us. And this is another episode, once again, of The Story Never Ends. I hope we, to see you, hear you, listen to us next time. I don't know how you end people saying see you next time, but you're not seeing them. So whatever, listen to us next time. Don't give up on us.
Embarrassing.
Listen to us next time. I've been doing this for how many episodes and I still haven't got the dynamic down.
Exactly.
But anyway, we'll catch you guys later.